The show is live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. And on the program today, we have two of the folks involved, including director and one of the actors, in a production by the Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana of John Cariani's play Almost Maine. That's Almost, Maine. Kay Holly is with us as director, and Rob Zaleski, one of the several actors involved in the show, which opened last night and continues through the 18th of this month. And we also have three performers from the Robert E. Brown Center for World Music Fall Concert at the University of Illinois in Urbana. That's tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. And we'll also have Philip Yampolsky, who is the director of that center, to talk about the various elements. We've got some live performers, so that should be a nice segment. I hope you'll agree, two nice segments on the show today. One of the many concerts you can go hear this weekend is one by the group Bells in Motion, a handbell group based in Springfield. And here is something from their disc called Bronze Images. It's called Misty. Music performed by the handbell ensemble called Bells in Motion from their disc called Bronze Images. And that is partly the title of their concert on Saturday night at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Springfield. It's actually called Bronze Noel, logically enough. And that will be at 7 o'clock. And there's lots of other events going on in our area, which we'll tell you about as the program progresses, including the play at the Station Theater in Urbana called Almost Maine by John Cariani, directed by Kay Bohannon Holly. It opened last night. It continues through the 5th of this weekend, and then the 8th through the 12th, and then the 15th through the 18th, all shows at 8 o'clock. And if you'd like more information, you can go to stationtheater.com. And Kay Holly's with us on the show, and she's brought along one of her actors and also at least five more of them, if I calculated right, by remote control, so to speak. Did a couple of a few recordings at a rehearsal recently. And first of all, thanks for coming in, both of you.
Absolutely.
Good to be here. Thanks, Kevin.
How did opening night go?
Fantastic. It was really, really good. It was sold out.
Wow, that's terrific.
The show was extremely well received. And it turned out to be what I hoped it would be, which was just a really warm evening of theater. People walked out smiling.
I read an article, probably in the News Gazette, I suppose, about the show in which you commented that it's not a Christmas show, but it's a good show for Christmas.
Absolutely.
Or at least for holiday time. Or
absolutely.
However you want to label it.
Exactly.
It doesn't have a Christmas theme, although being set in northern Maine, it does have a winter, very much a winter theme.
So set in northern Maine in the wintertime?
Yes. Uh-huh. Deep, dark winter. And it's must be January because they talk about things that happened in December. But I think it's a great December show. It's just the show is, to me, it has the feeling of just sitting in front of a warm fire, you know, or looking at Christmas tree lights. It's just that sense of light and warmth in the middle of the oncoming cold and dark.
So who's John Cariani and what else has he done?
You know, I don't know anything about John Cariani.
Really?
I know he's a Maine playwright, and I hear that he's, I guess I know a little. I hear that he has a new play that is going to be in production. But I haven't done a whole lot of looking into, I haven't heard of anything else that he's done. This play is actually very widely done. It's fairly new, well, 2004, that's not that new. It's pretty widely done, and often done by high schools sometimes. You know, it's done by all kinds of different groups. But I've read, anyway, that not all productions of it are completely successful.
Why? What would you think would be the challenge to making it successful?
I think the basic challenge would be tone. It walks a line because it is a play that is about love, and it is very sweet. It could be, I think, done in ways that are kind of silly and gratuitous and overly sentimental. And I think the challenge with the show is to try not to do that and just let it be honest. And then you get something that really is very sweet.
Tell us a little bit about the progress of it, if there is progress in it, because things happen simultaneously, don't they?
Yes. Everything that's happening is happening at 9 o'clock on a moonless Friday night.
And so you get a little bit of, you know, all these different interactions between all the characters, and they also reference other characters in other scenes. So you get this feeling of community while you're watching it. And, you know, as one character talks about another character, you can go, oh, yeah, that character was in the first scene. And so you get a feeling of all these people, you know, interacting and being interchangeable throughout the whole story. And you can kind of tell that everything is going on at the same time.
Are things actually happening, or are people just talking?
Well, it's most of them are conversation centered, yes, but they it's a series of two-handers basically. They're it's vignettes, so something like 10 of them,
yeah.
And so it's interaction between two people in each scene, and in one case there's a third person, and so it's not action filled in, you know, it is very much around a couple of people in a situation talking. But the things that happen in the scenes are often hysterically funny, sometimes very touching, and sometimes even a little bit sad.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I love about the play that I didn't appreciate at first until these actors brought it to life is the conversation in the play, the talking, is extremely naturally done, I think. It sounds real. It just sounds very everyday. It sounds without being everyday. There is a poetic, I think, feeling to the show as a whole, but the way the characters talk to each other is very natural.
I think that has to happen for it to work, too. I mean, I think if it were too blown out of proportion, then you wouldn't really feel like these characters were real people that you could touch and feel and see and, you know, be around. And I think that's one thing that is great about being at the station. It is such a small venue where you feel like you're there. So you really feel like, you know, you're just in a bar with these people, or sitting out in a field, listening to these people have a conversation as if they were, you know, people in your town.
The last show I saw there, which I think was two shows ago, I'm sorry to have missed the last one, but I heard that one also had basically no set. I think it was the first time I ever saw the back wall at the station theater, because it's a very small space for those who haven't been there. I've always thought you do a remarkable job as a company with turning that small space into whatever space you need it to be for the particular play. So what have you got? Are there sets for this one? Does it change? You know what happens?
The set designer, Jaden Peck, I think has done a lovely job, and he has pretty much realized my dream of what this show would look like from the very beginning. One of the characteristics of the play is a kind of, to use an overworked literary term, a kind of magical realism that happens. And so right from the beginning, I gave him that term as something to guide him in his work. So we've ended up with that. We've ended up with a set that has a, you know, a level of realism to it, but it also has a feeling of fantasy in a way. And it's very beautiful set.
I read that, probably in the same article, that this is not a typical play for you to direct.
No, I usually am attracted to, this is the largest cast that I've ever directed. I'm usually attracted to the living room dramas, basically. I really like the small cast, one room, kind of very intensive kinds of plays. I like plays that are, I like talky plays. I like plays about ideas. You often serious or bizarre in some way. I directed Copenhagen. I directed Wit. I directed Art. That's last year, Love Song with another small cast. So to take on a large cast in this vignette format and a play that's, it's not something that, when we were doing it, I kept kind of having to remind myself and the actors that in some ways we didn't have to dig as deeply into this script, that in fact I thought maybe if we dug too deeply it might actually harm it. And I'm someone who loves the challenge of a text that you have to close read and you know, deconstruct and pick apart and has lots of nuance. So this is just in many ways different for me in number of cast, the tone, the style, the vignette format, and so forth.
You said large cast, but that's relative because there's only, what, 10 people involved?
10.
Which
and
for
that's
the
a large
station,
cast
it's
for
large.
Me.
Yeah. And for the station, it's large. I don't know if I've seen a 10-person cast, and yet there's only ever two or three on stage at a time.
Right.
And Rob, you and a few others play more than one character in it.
Yes, most of us have two characters that we play throughout the show. A lot of us are in one scene in one act and one scene in the next act. And it really offers both a challenge and a fun factor. You want to make sure that your characters are differentiated enough so that people don't think that you're playing the same character, in two scenes. But it's also a lot of fun because it gives you the opportunity to not only have two different characters to play in a show, but then also bounce those off of everybody else's different characters that they're creating. And I think we've seen a lot of really good stuff come out of everybody in the show. I mean, the little quirks that are both written into the script as well as the ones that people have kind of added along the way really bring these characters to life in a magical realism type of way where, there's some things that are believable, some things that are a little supernatural, but it still feels very real.
Well, we have three short excerpts, in one case extremely short, that you recorded, I think, two nights ago at the dress rehearsal, which was nice of you to do because, those actors were working just like yesterday's actors for the show we were talking about. We're working the nerve of these people. it was nice of you guys to be able to come in. The first, and I think we take them in order. These are segments from the first three parts. Is the first one with David Barclay and Barbara Evans? Is it necessary to set this up at all? I don't know where it comes in.
Only to say that she is standing outside in the yard of his house, and he finds her there.
Hello.
Hello.
I thought I saw someone. I was about ready for bed. I saw you from my window. Is there something I can do for you?
Oh, no. I'm just here to see the Northern Lights.
Okay. It's awful late, and you're in my yard.
I hope you don't mind. I'll only be here tonight. I'll see them tonight, the Northern Lights, and then I'll be gone. Hope you don't mind.
Is that your tent?
Yes.
You've pitched a tent in
my yard.
So
I have a place to sleep after I see them. I hope you don't mind.
Well, I don't know.
Do you mind?
I think you mind.
No, you do mind. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't think you would. You see, it says in your brochure that people from Maine wouldn't mind. It says that people from Maine are different, that they live life the way life should be, and that in the tradition of their brethren in rural northern climes like Scandinavia, that they'll let people who are complete strangers, like cross-country skiers and bikers and hikers, just camp out in their yard if they need to for nothing. They'll just let you. I'm a hiker. Is it true that they'll let people just camp out in their yard if they need to? Because I need to camp out because I'm where I need to be.
I did, of course, hear these excerpts early. Mm-hmm. And unlike so many other plays where you hear a scene and you maybe don't necessarily get a good picture of what goes on. I feel like I did from this one. I mean, just I think David Barclay's first line in there is already kind of hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the way he just, I don't know how to describe the voice that he uses. There's a little pause and like, you're in my yard.
I think David Barclay is a really fabulous actor, and he's very good in both of the scenes that he's in. And that one goes on to get funnier.
He was in the last show I saw, and help me out with the name. It was two shows ago at the station.
Circle Mirror Transformation.
Yeah, and I'd only ever seen David in musicals, I think.
Well, and he's good.
And he's good in those. And this was such a different character for him then from what I was used to seeing, and he was a very quiet, somewhat disturbed sort of person, but just the understated way in which he spoke the lines had a lot of power behind it, and this sounds like he is doing something similar with this one.
He brings a naturalness and a believability to the work that he does, and detail. He can do real small things with his face that just express a whole lot. I'm really impressed.
And then Barbara Evans is one of the, if not an actual founding member of the Celebration Company, close to it.
She's been around for a very long time, and she doesn't act very often, but when she does a fantastic job.
What makes her decide to go out for a show? Any idea? Or why did she come out for this one?
I think she partly came out for this one because I asked her to. And I directed her in Wit a number of years ago. And I think we enjoyed working together then. And so I think that was part of the reason. And her husband, Gary Ambler, is in the show as well. So that might have had something to do with it.
You know, it was only relatively recently that I guess I didn't even know that they were married. I kind of assumed, on account of they lived in the same house, but you never know
right.
about those kind of things. And I'd seen them each in various places, and I just didn't know that. Well, that's kind of neither here nor there. Rob, one of your scenes is next. This is one where there's actually three people involved. Does this come at the beginning of your scene also?
It's pretty close. The scene takes place in a bar called the Moose Patty, which is kind of the place where everybody goes on Friday night. And my character, it starts off with a couple of beers, pretty much sulking in his sorrows. And then he sees his ex-girlfriend walk by. And this picks up during their very, very awkward exchange.
So did you hear I took over Dad's business?
Yeah, that's great.
I run it now.
I heard that.
Yeah, I'm running it.
Heard that.
Run the business.
Congratulations.
Run the whole show.
Good for you.
The whole shebang.
Good for you.
Thanks. Yeah. We still do heating and cooling.
Yeah.
And we've expanded now, too. We do rugs. We shampoo them.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, I do. I'm on call a lot. A lot of work. I do weekends, holidays, because, you know, your heat goes. People die. It's serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I do Thanksgiving, Christmas, because, you know, I let the guys who work for me, like East, helps with the repairs sometimes. I let them have the holiday off so they can be with their family, since I'm all alone this year.
Oh.
Yeah. I really don't have anybody anymore, really. Brother and sister got canned, so they left town.
Right.
And Mom and Dad retired, headed south.
I heard that.
Vermont.
Oh.
Yeah. Winters there are a lot easier. And then Spot went and died on me.
Oh, Jimmy, I didn't know that.
Yeah. He was old. It was his time. He was a good fish, though.
Yeah, is that what the whole show is like, where it all sounds okay, like sort of a normal conversation, and then you get these little one-line zingers?
There is quite a bit of that in there, and I've always been a fan of very awkward comedy. I mean, it's very tough for me as an actor to do this stuff because I just want to laugh. And the way he writes it with the intertwining conversation is actually written in the script that way, where there's pauses and breaks and a lot of interjections
overlap.
Between, yeah. And it really creates this believable conversation that's really funny and really awkward.
I can imagine that there would be, I mean, at least hearing the play out of that scene, that you have to judge the audience response when you go along, because if you have one of those little one-liners that clearly is going to get a laugh, and it does, you don't want to jump in with the next line right away, or people will miss it.
We realized that last night too, when we had our first full audience, that there were times when we weren't even expecting things to be as funny as they turned out to be. And you know, you have to be ready for those, to take that break and let the audience, because if you start cutting them off from laughing, well, then they might stop laughing, and you can't have that.
Well, and they might miss a line, and with such spare writing, one line is kind of important, as we just heard. Yeah. Some situations where actors laugh at a line can actually work. I'm actually sort of, which isn't even acting, but I remember Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. One of the things that was often funny about Johnny Carson is when he would crack up at his own jokes. but, of course, that's a whole different situation. Our last scene, which is the third, comes from the third vignette of Act One of Almost Maine. And I should remind people that's, in fact, what we're talking about, this play by John Cariani at the Celebration Company at the Station Theater, which opened last night, is with Grant Morenz and Joy Hofsummer. The few times I've seen Grant, he plays really outrageous characters, and he tends to play them really outrageously. Is this a break of character for him?
Is it a break of character? I don't know if outrageous is the word that I would use for this character, but he is unusual. He is unusual.
And what's the set here?
They're in the laundry room in the basement of a boarding house that they both live in, and this is the first time these two people have met. And he is a man who can't feel pain. So when you hear, there are some hits in here, he's hitting himself. That's the only thing I want to say about it.
Are you sure you're okay? You're just going on and on.
See, I have congenital analgesia.
What?
You think some people, congenital analgesia, like Brother Paul, some people call it hereditary sensory neuropathy type 4, but it just means that I can't feel pain. You can hit me if you want to see.
No.
Go ahead. It won't hurt. See?
Ow.
See?
Ow.
See?
Ow.
Go ahead.
No.
Come on.
No.
Come on.
No.
Okay. You don't have to hit me. Most people don't. Most people just go away. You can go away too if you want to. That's what most people do when I tell them about myself. My brother Paul says I shouldn't tell people about myself because I scare them. So actually, recently, I put myself on my list of things to be afraid of.
Oh, my gosh,
you hit me.
Oh, my gosh,
most people don't, but you hit me.
I just had to see, but are you okay?
Yeah, I don't feel pain.
Don't feel pain, right, you're okay, but are you sure?
Was there any blood?
No.
Any discoloration?
No.
I'm okay!
Well, and that scene is very, very visual, too. When you see it, it's even funnier.
Well, I'm just picturing Grant, since I do know him a little bit, and I can just imagine big bug eyes, you know, maybe during during that. Well, I got to say, just from these three little scenes, I want to go out and see the show.
I hope you will.
I'm
very proud of it. It actually isn't. I didn't pick this show myself, but it turned out that the show that I was wanting to direct became unavailable all of a sudden during the selection process. And so they asked me to read this one, and I first read it, and I thought, well, this is nice. But I'm really very proud of it.
And glad you did it, I gather.
Yes. It's a fantastic group of people.
I agree.
Kay Bohannon Holley is director of Almost Maine by John Cariani, the Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana. Opened it last night. It runs through the 5th this weekend, and then December 8th through 12th. And the third weekend is the 15th through the 18th. All shows are at 8 o'clock. The Station Theater is located at 223 North Broadway Avenue in Urbana. For more information and to make reservations, call area 217-384-4000. And for information on a little more on this show and other shows at the station coming up in this season, go to stationtheater.com. We've also had Rob Zaleski, one of the actors who shows up in two scenes of Almost Maine, has been with us on this portion as well, of portion of Live and Local as well. And I really thank both of you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Our next segment, we'll talk about the Robert E. Brown Center for World Music fall concert, which is taking place tomorrow afternoon at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And we've got some live performers from the Chinese Silk and Bamboo Ensemble, directed by Priscilla Tsai. Hope you'll stay with us. Before I run off, I need to say that our program today is made possible with support from the Champaign-Urbana Ballet, presenting a holiday tradition, The Nutcracker, with Sinfonia da Camera at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, December 3rd through the 5th. Also this weekend, of course. More information is available at krannertcenter.com or 333-6280. That was a performance by a local ensemble called Bossa Nuevo, and they specialize in music from Brazil and Argentina, Bossa Nova music, and also Tango Nuevo. And in this case, it was the Bossa Nova with music by Antonio Carlos Jobim, Omoro Nao Tem Vez, which I probably did not pronounce correctly, and apologies to anybody who actually knows that better than I do. We've had Bossa Nova on the show a number of times. That's one form of world music. And we're going to hear another representation of a concert tomorrow afternoon by the Robert E. Brown Center for World Music at the University of Illinois. It's going to be in the Caldwell Playhouse of the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The program has some nice variety on it, and we've got some Chinese musicians to play for us live here in the studio. And we also have the director of the program, Philip Yampolsky, with us. And why don't we let you sort of give the overview of what's going on and what goes on leading up to the concert to pull this all together.
Well, this is our regular end-of-semester concert. We do one at the end of every semester, in which we showcase the music that our university ensembles have been working on. We have, for this year, we have 3 ensembles. The West African Drumming Ensemble, which is directed by Musa Bulukada Konde, the Balinese Gamelan. Actually, we have 2 Balinese Gamelans. We have the University Balinese Gamelan and a community gamelan that's open to everyone, including you. And both of those are directed by Iketut Gede Asnawa from Bali. And we have our Chinese Silk and Bamboo Ensemble, which is 3 members of which are right here in the studio with us, including the director, Priscilla Che. I have some trouble with the name.
We usually don't have trouble with it.
Well, because it's not pronounced the way it's spelled. Anyway, it's T-S-E, which is Che, though you wouldn't know it. So our teachers, Priscilla and Pa Asnawa and Bulukada Konde, train their students this semester, and probably many of the students have been in for several years already or several semesters, and they're accomplished in this music, and then they give a performance at the end of the semester. We also regularly in our concerts include one or more guest artists. In this case, it will be an Indian dancer, Gulapudi Raman Kumari, who's a specialist in Odissi dance from the Orissa province in India. And she will perform 2 dances at the start. The first part of the program is her 2 solo dances accompanied by tape. Unfortunately, we don't have live musicians for that. Then our Balinese gamelan, both of our gamelans will perform. Then there'll be an intermission. Then the Chinese Silk and Bamboo Ensemble. And then we'll close with the African drummers. I have to confess that this is a long program, but we're the Center for World Music, and it's a big world.
There you go. There you go. Nicely put. where are those rhythm and rag players? They're not around it for this.
They've
concert,
gone back to India for the concert season in Calcutta. They'll be back in February. Gulapudi Raman Kumari teaches at Rhythm and Rag. She's the dancer. She teaches at Rhythm and Rag, and she'll be. She stays here, but the other two, the other three guys, went back to India for the concert season.
Yeah, regular long-time listeners to Live and Local may remember some folks from the Rhythm and Rag Society who have been on the show playing live, and we'll look forward to having them again sometime. Well, I know you've got two, hopefully three, pieces that you'd like to do for us. Priscilla, tell us a little bit about the Chinese Silk and Bamboo Ensemble. Why is it called Silk and Bamboo, and how many are in it?
Silk and Bamboo Ensemble features silk instruments. Means string instruments. In the past, they used silk for the strings, so that's why it's
they
called
don't now though. They,
well,
generally.
No, you cannot find. Well, it's very difficult. You need to order from maybe a specific place. Yeah.
Or and own an awful lot of your own silkworms. <in order to. laughs>
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, and bamboo is means a wind instrument. Because the Chinese foods are made of bamboo and still made of bamboo now. So Silk and Bamboo Ensemble means ensemble with stringed and wind instruments.
And how many folks have you got in this group?
This semester, I have 13 students, but Kenny Ren has been helping us in the ensemble. He's not registered in the class, but he will be perform with us as a guest performer. But he was in our class for a year last year. Yeah. So
he already arrived pretty good, if I recall, because you've been on the show once before, and
yes.
you've played the arhu, which is this one or two strings.
It's two strings.
Two strings on the instrument. You've been playing that for how long now?
I think it's around like 12 years or so.
So a while, yeah. A lot longer than everybody else in the class, I'm guessing.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I've only been playing 5 years.
Okay.
Well, then, there you go. And you are, I'm going to let you say your name again because
I'm Ji Song. Oh, yeah, that's Cantonese. I'm originally from Hong Kong.
I won't get into the varieties of all of that because I don't understand what is where. And that's why I'm here and you're there and you're going to play for us. What is the first tune we're going to have?
The first piece we're going to play is called Yu Le Sheng Ping, Rejoicing. It's from the Cantonese-speaking region. It was composed by a Cantonese musician in Hong Kong in the 1920s. You may hear some syncopation, some kind of big leaps in the melody. So that's the characteristics of Cantonese music.
So we have two of the arhu, two arhus. And the Yang Qin.
Yes, very good.
Which is a kind of a zither or dulcimer.
Dulcimer, yeah.
Yeah, so you're hitting it with, what are those little sticks made of? They're very delicate looking.
Bamboo. Can you see it's bouncing there?
I'm sure the listeners can't, but
yeah,
I can.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, she just gives it a little bit of a flick, and it's kind of a delicate stick with a wider bit on the end that... bounces quite a bit. So you're going to bounce it on the strings, which are made of metal, it seems like, looks like. Yeah.
The strings?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And, all right. These are members of the Chinese Silk and Bamboo Ensemble at the World Music Center at University of Illinois. They're going to be performing in the full concert tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock, and you're listening to Live and Local.
Thank you.
Do the, what do you call the sticks that you're hitting with?
We call the qinzhu in Chinese.
Which
means bamboo beaters for the Chinese dulcimer.
Okay, and does their flexibility help them to bounce the way they do?
Yeah, that's why we use bamboo for our beaters. In other cultures, you may also find dulcimer, that hammered dulcimer, but they don't use bamboo for the beaters. They may use wood or metal.
But often, I mean, that sort of bouncing sound and increasingly bouncing sound is kind of characteristic of a lot of different kinds of dulcimers. I'm also thinking of, Philip, what is the Hungarian one called? Simulum. Which this is not a dissimilar sound from that, I don't think, but partly it's the addition of these string instruments that gives it, at least to my ear, the characteristic Chinese sound, which is very different from the Hungarian, which is going to have lots of different other kinds of instruments around it. One of these days we'll turn this radio show into a TV show, in which case I would ask one of you guys on the Arhu to show me how to play it, and then I would embarrass myself by trying. But do your best, Kenny, maybe to describe how this instrument is played. I mean, as you said, there's two strings. I'm only seeing one. Where's... Oh, they're really close together, aren't they?
Yeah.
So when you finger it, you're not actually pressing down very much like you would on a violin, are you?
Oh, that depends, but like it's not necessary for you to press it really hard. And when you press it, it's just two strings altogether. There's just no choice.
So you press both strings at once?
Yeah. And the bow basically goes in between the two strings, and so you can switch in and out to choose one of the strings to play. Yeah.
So you press both strings at the same time, but you decide which string to play depending upon what pitch you want?
depending on like whether your bow is bowing the inside string or your bow is bowing the outside string. That's how you choose one of the strings.
Ah, this is one of those these days we've started videotaping the show now and then, and this would have been a good one. I didn't even think to try to get to have anybody here to do it. We're talking with members of the Chinese Silk and Bamboo Ensemble, the Robert E. Brown Center for World Music at the University of Illinois. They're giving their fall concert tomorrow night at 3 o'clock.
Tomorrow afternoon.
What did I say, tomorrow night? Don't show up at 3 in the morning. No one will be there. 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, Philip Yampolsky, who's prompting me here, is the director of the center. And Priscilla, how do you say your last name, Priscilla?
Che.
So, yeah, that's what it sounded like, yeah. And yet you're giggling at him when he's saying your name.
She was prompting me. I looked at her.
Oh, okay,
she said,
all right. Yeah, okay.
You know that.
Yeah. Is the director of that ensemble. You know, I didn't ask, what other instruments do we have besides the dulcimer and the arhu in the ensemble?
We have bamboo flute, dizi. We also have two kinds of plucked lute. One is called pipa, and the other one is called zhongran.
The last one I don't think I've seen before.
It's like a round shape plucked lute. It has a lower pitch.
Lower pitch than the pipa?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And we have also, say, sum?
Zisum.
Zisum one.
Yes.
The last name. And then Kenny Wren, both playing the arhu. And also on the concert, some Odissi dance, the Balinese gamelan. Just real quickly, Philip, you said there's a community gamelan and also the university gamelan. The gamelan is a collection of instruments. It's not an instrument.
That's
right.
The gamelan is an orchestra mostly consisting of metal keyed and of bronze instruments, with some with metal keys and some with gongs, metal gongs, knobbed gongs. And one of the key features of this, one of the key differences between a gamelan and an orchestra, is that all of the metal instruments of a gamelan are made together. They're made at the same time and tuned together in a specific Balinese way.
And there's a gamelan, isn't there, at one of the elementary schools?
Yes. We have, the Center for World Music has a program called World Music and Dance in the Schools, which is supported by the center itself, and it has partial support from the National Endowment for the Arts. And that program enables us to send our teachers and our artist associates out, including the rhythm and rag people that you spoke of, out into the schools to teach regularly. They teach, most of them teach once a week. Pa'asnawa, our gamelan teacher, teaches twice a week so that the kids really get a good dose of gamelan. The gamelan stays in the school, and he goes there twice a week to teach it. And we are going to have a pre-concert this tomorrow afternoon at 1:30, where three of the schools that we are sending our artists to, three of the schools will demonstrate at Colwell Playhouse in Cranert what they have learned. Pa'asnawa's Balinese gamelan from Martin Luther King School in Urbana, the Mande drummers, fifth graders at Wiley School in Urbana, who've been studying with Pulukata Conde, and children at Booker T. Washington School in Champaign, who have been studying capoeira, the Brazilian dance and music form. They've been studying with Contramestre Denis Charamonte and his associates from a capoeira academy here in Champaign. So they will perform. It's a free concert at 1:30 at Cranert before the Center for World Music, sort of the big folks.
Extravaganza, yeah.
Concert, yeah.
Well, I do want to give you a chance to maybe get both of the additional pieces in here. Let me say quickly that support for our show today comes in part from the Illinois Chamber Orchestra in Winter Wanderings, a candlelight concert featuring famous string music and holiday favorites, Friday, December 3rd at St. Agnes Church in Springfield, that's tonight, and Saturday, December 4th at Second Presbyterian Church in Bloomington. Information is available at ilsymphony.org. So, Priscilla, introduce our second piece.
Okay, the second piece is originally a erhu piece, contemporary erhu piece, for a Chinese orchestra. They play together as a unison, so it's not duet or trio. But you can also play as a solo piece. Because this semester I'm lucky to have two very experienced erhu players in my class. So I would like to have them to become the spotlight of our Chinese music program. So I'm going to accompany them. And this piece, I think, was composed in the 1960s or 70s by a very famous erhu player called Wang Guotong.
So is this our last piece?
Yes,
yes.
This
okay.
will be the last piece.
Right.
It's called Ban Chi Zai Qian Li Cao Yuan, galloping on the grassland. Okay. I need to tune a little bit.
Okay.
Okay.
And electronic tuners do have a place in traditional Chinese music. Thank you. Three members of the Chinese Silk and Bamboo Ensemble at the University of Illinois at the Robert E. Brown Center for World Music, who will be participating in tomorrow's fall concert from the center starting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at the Krannert Center's Caldwell Playhouse in Urbana. And then there's a free performance by a number of grade school world music groups at 1:30 in the same location. You can see some Indian classical dance, Odissi dance, and the Balinese gamelan and community gamelan, and, of course, the Silk and Bamboo Ensemble and the Mande Percussion Ensemble. All of these coordinated by the director of the World Music Center, Philip Yampolsky, and we just heard playing on Arhu, Kenny Wren, and Tsi Som Hwan, and on accompanying them on the Yangqin, or the Chinese zither, is Priscilla Che, who leads the Chinese Silk and Bamboo Ensemble. Really appreciate all of your coming in and doing the show today. It's great to hear you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And best of luck on tomorrow's concert.
Thank you.